Riley handed Cade the binoculars.
He's about 300 yards west of us down on the plain. Looks like they beat feet and left him behind.
After the decision to defy the Seneschal's orders, Cade and his men had wasted little time in replenishing their supplies and returning to the beyond. They made the trek to the Changshi camp as swiftly as possible, knowing that every second spent in their world might have translated into hours on the other side of reality. Now it looked like they might be too late. From their vantage point on the ridge, they could see that the tents that had housed the Changshi still littered the plain, but rather than being filled with the teeming horde they'd expected, they now appeared to be deserted. Several of them had been partially dismantled, as if the owners had been forced to flee in the midst of the job. The great bonfires that had marked the encampment when the Templars had last seen it were now nothing more than piles of black ash, though several still gave off thin wisps of smoke that climbed into the sky like disembodied spirits, indicating it hadn't been all that long since they'd been doused. In the middle of it all was Duncan. He was tied upright to a thick post that had been driven into the earth beneath his feet, and even at this distance, Cade could see the terrible bruises that covered the young Templar's face. He hung against the ropes that bound him to the post, unmoving, and Cade couldn't be sure if he was alive. Nor did he dare use his sight to find out. Doing so would attract the attention of other denizens of the beyond, and they didn't need any additional foes to worry about. No, they were going to have to do this the old-fashioned way. They had to go and see for themselves. A bit of searching revealed a narrow trail, and the team carefully picked their way down to the plain below. From there, they made a cautious approach, using what cover they could find, until they reached the edge of the encampment. There, Cade signaled a halt.
What do you think?
Riley gazed out over the abandoned encampment for a long moment.
They're out there. Somewhere. I can feel them.
Yeah, me too. But we expected that. What I need to know is if we risk it.
We don't really have a choice, do we?
They didn't have a choice. They'd come here to rescue Duncan, and the only way to do that was to stroll right through the enemy's camp and untie him from that pole. Anything else was just an obstacle they had to face in order to accomplish their mission. Riley passed the word, and the men formed up around Cade. They would enter the encampment and form a defensive perimeter around the pole while Cade checked on their teammate. If he was still alive, Cade would cut him down and they would retreat as expeditiously as possible. If something went wrong, if they were attacked or got separated, they agreed to regroup at the portal where they could return to their side of reality. Satisfied with the arrangements, Cade gave the order and the team moved out. The center of the encampment where Duncan was being held hostage was only 200 yards away, but to Cade, it felt like 2 miles. Every step brought them deeper into the heart of the enemy's camp, and while he couldn't see them, Cade knew they were out there, somewhere. He could feel it in his bones and crawling across his skin, that sense that 100 pairs of eyes were watching his every move, and his body was tense with anticipation, waiting for the sudden attack. Much to his surprise, it didn't come, and they were able to reach Duncan without incident. As the others took their places, Cade moved the last few yards and reached out for their fallen comrade. He was acutely aware that Duncan's position carefully mimicked that in which he'd found Bishop on that fateful day several years before, and recognized it for the message that it was. Bishop wanted him to know that he still remembered that day too, and it was clear that he blamed Cade for his current state of existence. They were on opposite sides of right and wrong, and Cade had no choice but to stop his former teammate before more harm was done. Reaching out, he gently lifted Duncan's head. He'd been beaten more than once, the older bruises having already turned a deep purple in color, while the newer ones were doing their best to catch up. One eye was swollen completely shut, his lips split in several places, and his open mouth revealed that he was going to need several courses of reconstructive surgery if he ever wanted to smile again. To Cade's surprise, not only was the other man alive, but he was conscious as well. Duncan opened one eye and said something too soft for Cade to hear.
What was that, Duncan?
It's a trap.
I know.
But...
Quiet. Let me worry about that. You just hold yourself together until we can get you back to a hospital on the other side. Brace yourself, because I'm going to cut you down.
Cade pulled out his knife, and positioning himself in front of Duncan, cut the ropes that bound him to the post. Duncan slumped forward, unable to support his own weight, and Cade caught him gently in his arms. Knowing time was of the essence, he hefted Duncan over his shoulder and turned, intent on getting him and the rest of his team out as quickly as possible. The Changshi chose that moment to reveal themselves.
Now!
The enemy mystics dropped the illusion they'd been using to hide their presence. Echo suddenly found itself surrounded by the missing horde. They were everywhere, packed into the narrow spaces between the tents, standing inside the structures themselves, even blocking the pathway the knights had just taken through the camp to reach Duncan. As the two groups stared at each other, a single Changshi stepped forward. He was tall and muscular, with blonde hair and blue eyes, the kind of man that most women would find instantly attractive if it hadn't been for the cruel set of his features or the hard gleam of hatred in his eyes. Cade was not surprised to see him.
Hello, Bishop.
He'd suspected the other's presence ever since they discovered the Changshi encampment, but having it confirmed didn't give him any sense of satisfaction. Bishop had been a good man, a good knight, and to see him reduced to his present condition was a vivid reminder that Cade had failed him all those years before, and had continued to fail him every day since.
Commander,
what do you want, Bishop?
What do I want? I would have thought that would be obvious at this point, Williams. Would it be too cliché if I said I wanted you dead?
Originality was never your strong suit.
Go ahead and make jokes. They don't bother me. You'll still scream just as loudly in the end.
Out of the corner of his eye, Cade could see Riley and several of the others shifting position, readying themselves for a final fatal charge against the vile creatures surrounding them.
Hold!
Riley shot him a look, but obeyed just the same, for which Cade was thankful. As long as Riley held steady, the others would as well. Bishop glanced over to see who Cade was speaking to, and his smile grew wider, if that was at all possible.
My. If it isn't my old teammate, Sergeant Riley, still taking orders from your betters?
Riley ignored him.
No matter. You simply saved me the trouble of hunting you down and killing you separately. I guess I should be thankful for that.
If it's my death you want, Bishop, then let's make a deal.
A deal? What do I need a deal for? All I have to do is give the word and you'll be dead in seconds.
But then you won't have the pleasure of killing me yourself. Where's the fun in that? Unless you're afraid to face me again. After all, I did kill you the last time we faced each other.
I'll kill you now, you stupid
You'll
little-
do no such thing.
Cade watched in amazement as the crowd parted behind the former knight, revealing the speaker. In her human guise, she was beautiful. A tall, lithe woman of Asian descent with porcelain skin and long dark hair the color of crow feathers, the kind of woman men would fight over. But Cade didn't need his special sight to know that beneath that casual facade lingered a slavering beast that would feast on him as readily as her lieutenant would. She was surrounded by some of the largest Changshi Cade had ever seen, obviously bodyguards, and the way Bishop deferred to her made Cade realize where the true power was.
Princess, this is no concern of yours.
But it is, Bishop, it is. After all, I can't have anyone, least of all a mere human, casting doubt on my lieutenant's abilities, can I?
Williams has been promised to another, or have you forgotten our agreement?
I made no such agreement, Bishop. That was you and you alone. How you honor that agreement is your business, not mine.
Bishop didn't argue with her any further. Apparently the woman, the princess, Cade corrected himself, was satisfied with that, for she moved past Bishop without another word and stepped up in front of Cade, extending her hand.
I am Princess Akiko.
Cade nodded, acknowledging her introduction, but refusing to take her hand. She ignored the slight and looked him over for several long minutes.
We have met once before, haven't we?
Yes.
Then you know who I am.
Again, Cade nodded, but didn't tell her that it had nothing to do with their prior confrontation. The Order maintained extensive files on all manner of supernatural creatures, and the Changshi were no exception. Much like the way in which the police traced the connections among the major crime families that once ruled New York, Chicago, and Philadelphia, so too did the Order track their enemies. Cade knew that Akiko was a minor member of one of the Changshi's ruling bloodlines. As such, he never would have expected her of being the power behind such a large war force. There was obviously more going on here than he knew.
Good. I'll accept your challenge.
I'm sorry?
Single combat. You against Bishop. If you lose, the lives of your men are also forfeit.
And if I win?
Then I will allow you and your men a head start before I release the rest of my hunters on your trail.
It was the best he was going to get, and Cade knew it. At the very least, it gave his men a fighting chance. It would also give him time to figure out just what agreement Bishop was talking about.
With a deal like that and the odds so overwhelmingly on my side, how could I say no?
You amuse me, Commander Cade Williams. When Bishop is done with you, perhaps I will take you into my house as my servant. Would you like that?
You have far too much confidence in your champion, m'lady.
We shall see, Commander. We shall see. You will have 5 minutes to confer with your men, and then the battle shall begin.
By sheer force of numbers, the Changxi herded the men of Echo to the far side of the camp, where a large circular ring was already laid out on the ground in front of a wooden platform that reminded Cade of an improvised stage. The sides of the circle were of piled stone, and the center was full of sand. Apparently, this was where he was to fight Bishop, and if the stains on the ground were any indication, it wouldn't be the first fight to the death that had been held here. As the Changxi began preparing for the confrontation, Kay joined the rest of his men off to one side of the gathering crowd. Duncan was stretched out unconscious on the ground, and Davis was kneeling beside him, using his medkit to tend to the other man's wounds.
How is he?
Better than I expected. He's got at least a couple of broken ribs and possibly a concussion, though I can't be certain of the latter without further testing. They beat him and cut him up pretty bad, but whoever did it, they knew what they were doing. He won't ever look the same, but nothing they did is life-threatening. With time and plenty of rest, he should do all right.
Good. Keep him comfortable and be ready to move quickly if we get the chance.
Roger that.
Cade said a few words to the rest of the men, reassuring them with the calm confidence in his voice and his generally upbeat tone, and by the time he turned away to speak to Riley, a few of them were even smiling in his wake. The Knight Commander stepped over to where Riley stood guard at the edge of the circle, glaring at those Changxi that wandered a bit too close. Cade handed his sword to Riley and then shed his body armor piece by piece. Cade knew he needed to be quick on his feet, and while the heavy tactical suit might protect him from more than just a glancing blow, it would also limit his movements and slow him considerably. He quickly stripped off his shirt as well, not wanting Bishop to be able to use it as leverage against him should the fighting get in close and dirty. He considered discarding his boots, but ultimately decided against it. He'd learned long ago that on uncertain ground, bare feet were best, but in this case, he'd trade that stability for the additional damage the heavy boots would add to any strike he might deliver with them. Satisfied with his preparations, he turned back to Riley and drew his sword from the scabbard in the other man's hands.
You know you can't trust her, right?
Of course not.
Riley kept his attention on those around them, just as Cade was doing, wary that one of the Changxi might use a momentary lack of attention to attack, despite Princess Akiko's orders.
Good. And you and I both know that Johansson won't be sending anyone after us, especially after I disobeyed his direct order. So we're on our own.
What else is new?
Cade was suddenly glad that he had the big Master Sergeant at his side. The two of them had been through a lot in their years together, and he wouldn't want any other man beside him at a time like this. He knew he could trust Riley to do the right thing, when the time came.
I don't see a way out of this yet, but the day's still young. Keep your eyes open, and if you have a chance to get the rest of the team out of here, don't hesitate to take it.
Roger that.
Cade looked at him and could see that despite his agreement, Riley had no intention of leaving him behind, no matter what opportunity might present itself. Cade didn't blame him. If their positions had been reversed, he wouldn't do it either. They'd returned to the Beyond to rescue a missing teammate. There was no way either of them would leave the other behind at this point. Riley met his gaze, and in the other man's eyes, Cade could see all the things that he wanted to say as well. Things that would never be voiced, but that both men understood, nevertheless. Cade nodded and slapped him on the shoulder, knowing that nothing further needed to be said. He turned and looked out over the makeshift arena before him, gauging the amount of space available, making note of the places where the ground was uneven and where it was smooth. He had no doubt that Bishop would be a dangerous opponent, for on top of his Templar training, the other man could now add inhuman strength and speed to his arsenal. K Cade knew that he was going to need every advantage that he could get in order to come out on top. He was confident that he was the better technical swordsman, but if it came to a hand-to-hand brawl dependent on speed and stamina, he was going to be seriously outclassed. A commotion caught his attention, and he turned in time to see Princess Akiko being led through the crowd. The throne on which he rode was heavy enough that it took 8 men to carry it, and was made of a stone so black that it seemed to suck the light right out of the space around her. For all Cade knew, maybe it actually did. The throne was carried up onto the platform and set down near the edge. The princess stood and gestured off to one side. In response, the crowd parted, and Bishop strode forward. He stopped before the platform and received a few words of encouragement or strategy from the princess, then joined Cade in the center of the circle. As he approached, Cade settled into his combat stance, not wanting to be caught unprepared should things start suddenly. He stood with his left foot ahead of his right, with his body turned slightly to the side to present a slimmer target for his foe. He held his sword before him in a two-handed grip, its point directed at Bishop's head. He concentrated on his breathing, knowing he was going to have to win quickly and decisively if he hoped to get out of this alive, and the best chance he had to do that was to stay focused and ready.
You look a bit nervous, Williams. Don't worry, I'll make it quick.
Cade didn't reply, not wanting to waste even the slightest bit of energy. He would need all he had to win this fight. Princess Akiko raised her arms.
A challenge has been made and accepted. 2 shall enter the circle of judgment, but only 1 shall prevail and leave its confines.
Her words had the ring of ritual to them, and Kay tuned them out. He watched his opponent instead. Bishop stared back, a haughty smile of superiority on his face. Unlike Cade, whose weapon harkened back to the styles used by the Templars in the early days of the Order, Bishop held a Japanese katana, and from the way he was rotating it in his one-handed grip, it was clear that he was quite comfortable using it. Cade had no doubt the weapon was razor sharp, and he made a mental note to be twice as careful. Even a light slash could cause serious damage if he was unlucky enough to get hit. Cade cast one last glance over at Riley, caught a nod of support from the other man, and then turned his attention back to his opponent. It was do-or-die time.
Fight!
Bishop exploded toward him, his weapon swinging in toward Cade's midsection in a vicious strike. He twisted and brought his own weapon up in a semicircular motion that brought it swinging back in toward Bishop's neck. Back and forth they went, blow after blow, twisting and turning, moving about inside the confines of the circle, each man striving to gain the upper hand to deliver the killing stroke. It was Bishop who drew first blood, cutting in beneath Cade's guard and slashing the tip of his sword across the Knight Commander's thigh.
I'll carve you up one cut at a time, Commander.
Cade ignored him, and the cut as well. He could tell it wasn't too deep, and he therefore wasn't in any real danger, but still, eventually the blood loss would take its toll. He'd just have to redouble his efforts and put an end to this before that happened. Wounding Cade made Bishop cocky, and his strikes began to get a bit sloppy, his overconfidence working against him. Cade pretended not to notice, slowing down his responses to Bishop's attacks so that it seemed as if he were injured more than he actually was, drawing the other man in closer and closer with every exchange of blows. Predictably, Bishop closed in, sensing a possible chance at victory. Which was just what Cade wanted. Bishop was a hair too slow in recovering from a particularly vicious strike, and Cade saw his chance. As Bishop came in, Cade feinted to the left and then spun in the opposite direction, coming in under Bishop's guard. He lifted his right leg and slammed his booted foot down on the inside of Bishop's knee. The knee gave way, dropping his opponent to the ground on one leg. Another few seconds and the fight would be over.
This is for Olsen, you motherfucker.
As Cade's weapon came slashing toward him, he threw himself the rest of the way to the ground and spun his body around, ignoring the pain in his wounded leg and lashing out with his good one. His heels connected with the back of Cade's knees, knocking the Templar commander to the ground beside him. As he hit, Cade's sword bounced free of his grip. Bishop was on him in an instant. Bishop pinned Cade's arms, and the Knight Commander found himself staring up into his former teammate's face as the other man opened his mouth impossibly wide, revealing the double set of teeth that suddenly seemed to fill his mouth as if out of nowhere. The teeth descended. With his arms pinned, Cade knew he had only one chance to save himself, and he didn't hesitate. As Bishop's open mouth descended toward his unprotected throat, Cade reared up and as hard as he could, slammed his forehead into the other man's face. The blow momentarily stunned Bishop, but that was all the time Cade needed. He wrenched one arm free, then reached down and grabbed his combat knife from the sheath on his calf. Cade shoved the blade through the underside of his enemy's unprotected jaw and deep into his skull. Bishop stiffened, and then toppled over backward. Letting go of the knife, Cade kicked himself free of Bishop's corpse, climbed to his feet, and staggered a few steps away. Behind him, Bishop sat up. Cade caught the motion out of the corner of his eye and turned in amazement, just in time to see Bishop reach up, grab the knife by its hilt, and yank it free of his flesh. Bishop tossed it idly to the side. Around a mouthful of black blood, the other man smiled at Cade.
The fight's not over yet, Commander.
The Chengxi warrior retrieved his sword and climbed slowly to his feet, his fractured knee already healed. Then, as Cade watched in shocked amazement, Bishop's left arm began changing, growing longer and thinner, stretching forward inch by inch, until his entire forearm had become a whip-like appendage with barbed hooks appearing every few inches along its length. Bishop cracked it across the space between them. For the first time since the fight started, Cade knew that he was in trouble. A quick glance showed his sword lying in the dirt between them. Bishop had seen it as well, however, and he advanced, cracking the whip at Cade's head, forcing him back, away from the weapon. Bishop moved forward until he stood over Cade's sword, and then used his foot to flip the weapon up and out of the ring, beyond Cade's reach. But Cade had anticipated such a move and reacted just as swiftly, darting toward the mass of spectators at the circle's edge and grabbing the first weapon he could get his hands on, a long scimitar-like blade that he took right off the belt of an unsuspecting Chengxi warrior. Bishop chose that moment to rush him, hoping to catch him off balance. Cade backpedaled, parrying Bishop's sword with the flat edge of his own. Then he had to practically dive to the side to avoid the lashing strike of the whip that Bishop aimed at his face. The fight quickly devolved from there. Bishop took control, forcing Cade to move where he wanted around the ring, the whip lashing out at him time and time again, until Cade's shirt was ripped and his torso bloody. As he ducked to avoid another lashing blow, his foot slipped in the loose sand and he stumbled off balance. Bishop made full use of the opportunity. He struck out with a whip, wrapping it around Cade's chest, pinning his sword arm to his side. Cade struggled vainly against the bonds that held him, but it was no use. With a quick yank, Bishop pulled him in closer.
Looks like I'll just have to deliver your corpse instead.
Bishop raised the sword in his other hand, preparing to bring it down for the final strike that would end the combat and Cade's life. Something shot past Cade's ear, and in its wake, Bishop reared up in pain, the feathered end of a crossbow bolt sticking out of his left eye socket. Several other bolts followed in quick succession, striking him about the face and neck. But Chengxi rose up as they realized they were under attack. They were answered by a literal rain of crossbow bolts as the Templar Knights that had surrounded the camp during Cade's duel with Bishop brought the full might of their numbers to bear against the enemy. Both sides surged together. Cade fought to untangle himself from Bishop, all the while expecting some passing Chengxi soldier to kill him before he'd managed to do so. But he freed himself and staggered to his feet unharmed. Or at least, no worse for wear than when he'd gone down. Pandemonium reigned. Combatants were everywhere, and no sooner had Cade regained his feet than he was swept up in the maelstrom, forced to defend himself against Chengxi warriors hell-bent on survival. He fought off two such creatures and turned to take on a third, only realizing it was Riley at the last moment. The other man grinned at him, and then eviscerated a nearby opponent with a sudden thrust of his weapon. They fought until there weren't any more Chengxi left to fight. Bodies littered the ground in every direction. But when it was over, the only ones left standing were members of the Order. Cade found a clear spot and all but collapsed to the ground. He was joined a moment later by Riley, who began using a battlefield medkit to bandage Cade's most grievous wounds.
You had me worried there for a minute or two.
Makes two of us. Never figured Johansson would order our rescue, that's for sure.
He didn't. It was Juarez and his men from Charlie Team. When he heard you'd bucked orders to go back for Duncan, he pulled his men off furlough and got here as quickly as he could.
They must have moved pretty damn quickly.
Took him 3 days. Word is, he expected to be avenging our deaths rather than rescuing our hides. The time differential between this world and our own worked in our favor. Now, hold still.
The Knight Commander grimaced, but managed not to flinch too much as Riley wrapped the bandage tight. To keep his attention off Riley's ministrations, Cade looked at the activity going on around them. Several field medics were moving through the group, caring for other soldiers in the same fashion that Riley was doing for him, and across the way, Cade could see a collection team gathering the bodies of the dead and preparing them for transportation back to the other side of the Vale. That was a job he didn't envy at all. A few yards away, he could see a fellow knight rummaging through the ruins of a nearby tent. At first, Cade thought he was just looking for souvenirs, a practice that, while frowned upon, wasn't actually against the Order's rule, but the other man was putting too much effort into what he was doing for it to be something so trivial. Curious now, Cade kept watching. Another moment passed before he recognized that it was Davis, the man who'd been tending to Duncan before the fight broke out. As Riley rummaged in the kit for another bandage, Cade stood. Davis's actions became more frantic the longer Cade watched. Convinced he'd seen enough, Cade decided it was time to find out what was going on. He began walking toward the other man.
Davis? What's the matter, Davis?
I left him right here! I know I did!
When the sergeant turned to face him, Cade was shocked to see tears streaming down the man's face. An unquiet feeling unfurled itself in Cade's gut.
Left who right here, Davis?
But the other man had already tuned him out. He began picking through the pile of corpses, tossing aside each one when it wasn't the man he was looking for.
He was right here! He was right here, I tell you!
Cade moved forward and grabbed his arm. When the sergeant tried to shake him off, Cade slapped him across the face.
What are you talking about, Davis? Left who right here?
Duncan!
What?
When the fight broke out, he was too weak to join us. And we needed all hands to defend ourselves against the mob. I made sure he was well hidden and gave him a sword just in case. But the fighting, it swept us away from each other, and when I got back, he was gone.
Could he have gotten up on his own?
Maybe.
But Cade read the unspoken hesitation in Davis's expression, and knew that it wasn't likely. Duncan had been badly injured. He wouldn't have left his hiding place unless he'd had no other choice. And that meant he'd been under pressure from the enemy. By now, Riley had joined them, and Cade quickly filled him in. The Master Sergeant wasted no time in organizing a search. After all, Duncan was the entire reason they'd come back. It was possible Duncan had moved to another location, either to avoid being discovered or to escape a pursuing enemy. Or maybe he'd received help from a fellow knight, and was right now sitting among the wounded in the field hospital that had been set up to treat the injured. Unfortunately, it didn't take long to determine that wasn't the case. Another team began checking the bodies of the dead still left on the field of battle, but that failed to turn up any sign of him either. In the process, they discovered something else. Bishop's body was gone. It wasn't in the Circle of Judgment where Cade had left it, nor had it been collected with the other bodies by the cleanup squad. Suddenly, one of Juarez's men was gesturing to them from the edge of camp, waving them over. Cade and Riley lost no time in joining him.
Look!
The man pointed at a spot in the midst of a set of tracks leading away from the camp. At first, Cade didn't see it, but then he bent closer and the glint of gold caught his eye. It was a Templar's signet ring. It was half buried as if it had been trampled underfoot, or deliberately stepped on to hide it from casual view. His heart thumping, Cade brushed away the dirt and pulled the ring free of the earth surrounding it. Every member of the Order was given just such a ring on the day they were formally inducted, and it was Templar policy to engrave the inside of the band with a man's identification number and date of membership. Chances were good it belonged to either Duncan or Bishop. He read the number aloud to Riley. As the unit's exec, he knew every man's identification number by heart.
It's Duncan's.
But what was it doing here? Cade considered the situation for a minute, weighing the pros and cons of his next course of action, and then made up his mind. He asked Riley to hold the ring for a moment, and then stripped off the glove, covering his right hand.
We need to know what happened. The fastest and most accurate way of doing that is with my gift.
But you've told me before that using it here in the Beyond can attract unwanted attention.
True, but right now I don't see any other option. And I think most creatures, supernatural or otherwise, would think twice before attacking a group this size. I've got to take the chance.
Without further discussion, Kate picked up and held the ring in his bare hand. Weariness, pain, embarrassment that his comrades have been forced to place themselves in danger on his behalf. The sharp poke of a sword blade in the small of his back.
Keep moving. Williams came back for you once. I'm sure he'll do it again.
He stumbled, his injuries and the lack of food taking its toll. But it gave him an idea. As he walked, he carefully pulled off his ring and held it in his left hand. A few steps later, he stumbled again. Only this time, he let the momentum take him all the way to the ground. Making certain, as he did so, that the hand with the ring was beneath him. He used the weight of his fall to drive his ring into the ground under him. When his captor dragged him back up on his feet, he made certain to stumble forward a few more steps, taking the two of them beyond the point where he had left the ring. With any luck, one of his brothers would find it before things got any worse. Cade came out of his trance, shaking his head, doing what he could to clear away the cobwebs that remained from putting his consciousness in the mind and memories of another. Riley was looking at him expectantly.
He's alive. That's the good news. The bad news is that he's not alone. Bishop has him.
Roughly 2 hours later, Captain Sullivan stepped up to where Cade was making plans with Riley.
That's it, sir. Aside from the two of you and First Squad itself, the rest of the men have all made the transit back through the gate. Whenever you're ready, we can go.
Cade glanced at Riley, caught his barely perceptible nod in reply, and made his decision. He turned to address Sullivan.
You're gonna have to go on without us, Captain. We're staying here.
I'm sorry?
Master Sergeant Riley and I are going to remain here for the time being. We still have a man missing, and I don't intend to leave until we get him back.
Very well, sir. I'll give you whatever assistance I can. Let me just inform the others about...
I appreciate the offer, Captain, but I can't allow that. With Duncan missing, Olsen dead, and Riley here with me, Echo's command unit is effectively paralyzed. As head of First Squad, you're next in the chain of command. I need you to assume control of Echo until I return. We shouldn't be gone more than 24 hours, if we're lucky. They don't have much of a head start. 2 hours, maybe three at the most. If things go well, we should be able to catch up to them, rescue Duncan, and return to our side of reality before you know it.
The captain protested a few moments longer, but Cade could tell that his heart wasn't in it. And who could blame him? No one in their right mind would want to stay here among the unquiet dead if they didn't have to, including Cade. Yet he was staying nonetheless. He had no intention of abandoning Duncan to whatever fate Bishop had in store for him, at least not without a fight. He was also convinced that this was where he might finally gain some answers to the questions that had been haunting him, about the adversary, about his wife's demise, even about his own strange gifts. The answers were here. He just had to have the nerve to go out and find them. And that was exactly what he intended to do.
When you return, you'll probably find the Perceptor waiting to close the gate. They might even destroy the church just to make sure the gate can't be opened again. I want you to let them do so.
Cade explained that he and the Master Sergeant had another means of returning to the real world, and that it was a route that the Changshi were not aware of. By closing the gate, they would be satisfying the Preceptor's demands, while at the same time denying that route to any of the enemy that still might be able to make use of it. Cade had no idea how the Changshi had managed to open it in the first place, but he was damned if he was going to leave a route to his side of reality open to any of the other denizens of the beyond.
Remember, close down that gateway.
The other man assured him he would, and then the foursome moved off, intent on reaching the portal before those waiting on the other side got impatient and decided to act without waiting for their return. Kay didn't blame them. He wouldn't trust the Preceptor either. Satisfied that he'd done all he could to protect his men, both here and on the other side of the portal, he turned back to Riley and inclined his head in the direction that they thought Bishop and Duncan had taken a few hours before. Without another word, the two men set off on the trail of their teammate and friend. The hunt was underway. They moved at a good pace, aware that they needed to close the lead that Bishop had on them. They had a lot of distance to cover, and every minute was crucial. They hadn't gone far before they discovered another strange aspect of the beyond. Time itself seemed to be operating on a schedule unique to each of them. When Cade felt as if only a few moments had passed, for Riley it would seem like it had been hours. Shortly thereafter, their positions would be reversed, and it would be Cade who felt as if they'd been traveling for hours while Riley was refreshed and ready to go. Their watches were no help either. Cade's digital refused to work, while the hands of Riley's analog model simply spun in a continuous circle counterclockwise. The terrain grew more rugged as they went, the mountains rising higher and the pathways narrower. An hour into their march, they came across the first visible evidence that they were on the right track. A piece of tattered cloth had been partially trampled into the mud, and when Riley pulled it free of the earth, they could see that it was a portion of Duncan's jumpsuit. Cade wished that he dared use his sight again, for he desperately wanted to know how his subordinate was holding up under the strain of being a captive. But doing so was an unnecessary risk, and he restrained himself. It was clear that Duncan had intentionally left the scrap behind for them to find, even going so far as to trample it in the dirt to hide it from Bishop's notice, as he had done with the ring. And so Cade was forced to rely on that to keep his hopes up. They camped that night in a small cave along a narrow mountain trail. They didn't have any rations, and so mealtime that night was a sorry affair, with just packs of powdered drink mix added to sustain them. Uncertain of what might be roaming out in the darkness, they also chose to go without a fire. The latter decision turned out to be fortuitous. Cade had just settled down to get some shut-eye.
Cade!
When Cade joined Riley, the big sergeant pointed out across the darkness in the direction they were traveling. A campfire burned there, its green glow flickering against the sky like a beacon in the night.
What do you think?
2, maybe 3 hours. No way to catch them in this darkness, though. We're gonna have to wait until sunrise.
I agree.
Cade stood and watched that fire for a long time thereafter, as if hoping he might learn something new. Eventually, he slipped back inside the cave and tried to get some sleep. They got an early start the next morning, setting out in the gray half-light that preceded the dawn. The sighting the night before had reinvigorated them, and they hoped to gain some time on their quarry by getting underway at that hour. The mountains continued as far as the eye could see, but the two moved doggedly onward, thinking that those they hunted would be doing the same. More than once they were forced to break out the climbing ropes they had brought with them, tying themselves together in case one of them slipped on the narrow trails. It was just after midday when they entered a narrow chasm that seemed to have been cut from the living rock around them by a giant blade. It was so narrow that at times they were forced to remove their packs and walk sideways, the stone pushing against their chests and backs, but each time they made it through. As they emerged from the tight channel through which they'd been passing, they found themselves standing on the edge of a cliff, looking down toward the sea. At the base of the cliff loomed a city, but a city the likes of which they had never seen. Great spires of crystal rose high into the sky, but at angles that hurt the eyes, like the freakish and twisted playthings of a giant. Playthings that had gone horribly wrong somewhere between inception and culmination. Dark monoliths of squat stone stood around and between them, a sharp contrast not only in their size and shape, but in the simple lines of their design. What appeared to be factories of some kind belched dark smoke into the sky, but the smoke seemed to have a life of its own as it twisted and turned under its own design, and often against the wind. A wall rose around the city, and a road led from the cliff face somewhere below them, right up to the massive gate that barred entrance to the place. It was like something out of a nightmare, a haven for the damned. Just beyond the city was a sea of wine-dark waves that crashed against the base of the plateau on which it stood, sending spray hundreds of feet into the air. The water extended out in every direction, and looking at it, Keith suddenly felt as if they'd come to the very end of the earth. Exhausted and hungry, the two Templar knights stared down at this unearthly marvel in sheer amazement, both of them wondering the same thing. Was this where Bishop had been headed? As if in answer to their question, two figures appeared on the road far below. One strode forward unhindered, while the other constantly stumbled and fell. Each time it happened, the individual in the lead would haul on the rope that bound them together until the second individual climbed wearily to his feet. The newcomers were too far away to see clearly, but Cade didn't have to see them to know who they were. Something deep inside told him what he needed to know. He turned to Riley with a smile, pointing them out as he did so. There was no question in his mind that they had done it. They had caught up with Duncan. Now all they had to do was rescue him. Duncan stared up at the city walls before him in numb amazement. Nothing he'd seen so far could have prepared him for this. Discovering that a place like the Beyond existed at all had been disconcerting enough, but to find a city of this size and scale here in the midst of it defied all logical explanation. It was more than he could take. He was exhausted, both mentally and physically. His body was battered and bruised from the beatings he'd taken, and his broken ribs screamed in pain every time his upper body moved. The fever from the infection in his shoulder wasn't helping either. Or at least that's what he thought it was, though it was unlike any infection he'd ever seen. Thick black pus was leaking from the center of the wound, while the skin surrounding it had been leached completely of color. But it was the fact that it pulsed completely out of sync with his heartbeat that really unnerved him. Like it had a heartbeat of its own. He didn't want to think about the implications that brought along with it. Bishop passed something to the guards at the gate, and then pushed his way through the crowd into the city proper, dragging Duncan along with him. His captor had apparently been here before, for he moved swiftly and surely through the crowded city streets, intent on some destination only he knew. Weary from their forced march and the pain of his injuries, Duncan was reduced to stumbling along behind him. He knew he should be concentrating on where they were going just in case he managed to find a way to free himself. But the streets all looked the same to his fever-addled mind. It was all he could do to keep himself upright. Bishop wouldn't stop if Duncan lost his footing. He knew that from previous experience. After what seemed like hours of wandering up one street and down another, Bishop entered a large outdoor marketplace and stopped at a stall near the far end. A noxious smell hung over the place, and Duncan found it difficult to breathe through the fumes. The proprietor was a large man in dark clothing and a rubber apron that stretched from his chest to just above his feet. He nodded a welcome at Bishop, giving Duncan the sense that the two of them had done business together before. Duncan glanced around, taking in the open furnaces in which green-gray flames burned with cold light, the anvils and the barrels of iron tools scattered throughout the place. Even to his fever-addled mind, it was enough to suggest that he stood in some kind of smithy. Bishop's next request confirmed it.
Put him in chains.
That was enough to rouse Duncan from his fog. He glanced wildly around, trying to gauge where the threat was going to come from, but by then it was too late. The blacksmith's assistant, having quietly come up behind the trio, kicked Duncan's legs out from under him. Then the assistant grabbed his arms and yanked them upward so that they lay across a nearby anvil. The blacksmith worked quickly, grabbing a nearby barrel and dumping a thick gray substance from its depths onto Duncan's wrists. The stuff was icy cold, so cold that his heart skipped a beat. But the blacksmith never hesitated, reaching in with his bare hands and sculpting the substance into the shape he wanted. Before Duncan even had the chance to object, it was over. The blacksmith released Duncan's hands, and they fell back into his lap, far heavier than before. In place of the rope, a set of iron manacles now encircled each wrist, with a 2-foot piece of chain dangling between them. Duncan stared at them, repulsed and fascinated at the same time. The metal was cold, and where it touched him, it seemed to leach the warmth right from his flesh. Even more distressing were the faces in the surface of the metal, faces he kept seeing out of the corner of his eyes, faces with the lost and tortured expressions of the damned. After all he'd been through, this last was too much for Duncan.
Get him off! Get him off!
He pushed frantically at the manacles, first with one hand and then the other, shoving with all his strength, trying to force them over the base of his palms, anything to get them off his skin. The chains didn't budge.
Help me, Lord. Help me.
On your feet!
The Templar Knight climbed wearily to his feet, his morale shaken and his strength all but gone. He could only watch dully as Bishop hooked a longer piece of chain to the length that stretched between the manacles on his wrists. A leather handle had been attached to the other end of that chain. Bishop removed a gold ring from one finger, which the blacksmith accepted as payment, and the handle was given to Bishop, who used it like a leash to drag Duncan along behind him as they left the shop. They only traveled a few blocks before Bishop knocked on the door of another establishment. The door opened, and they were ushered inside. They were being led down a dark hallway, past open rooms where a variety of creatures stared out at them as they passed. Here, a man sat by the window, the decapitated head of his lover resting in his arms. There, a woman sat cutting the inside of her thigh, over and over again. Each time the blade slashed through her flesh, it instantly healed again, which only seemed to drive her to new heights of frustration and deeper cuts of the knife. Each room held some different tableau, and in his exhausted state, Duncan wasn't certain if what he was seeing was hallucination or reality. They came to a rickety wooden staircase that led to the second story, and he stumbled up it in Bishop's wake. Their host, a skeletal old woman dressed in a ragged shawl, brought them to the second room on the right and ushered them inside. Aside from the wash bin in the corner, the only furniture was a wooden bed in the center of the room. Duncan barely made it over the threshold before he collapsed on the floor and immediately fell into a restless sleep.
How are we gonna get in there?
Cade could only shake his head. He didn't have an answer. Not yet, at least. They spent the next hour watching the traffic on the road below them. A good number of travelers came and went during that time, and it quickly became obvious that this must not be the only city of its kind in the beyond. The variety of travelers was staggering, from lone individuals on foot to long wagon trains full of people and trade goods. More than a few didn't look human. Watching them come and go gave Cade an idea. He explained his plan to Riley, who agreed it was their best chance at getting inside. The first step was to get down to the plain below without being seen. A few minutes of searching helped locate a trail leading downward. It was more a goat path than anything else, just a thin, barely visible track, but it was all they had and it would have to do. Thankfully, it wasn't too steep. Rather than taking the more direct route straight down, it wound its way around the mountain in a series of alternating switchbacks. They followed it at a slow and steady pace. Eventually, they reached the bottom without incident. The city was out of sight around the edge of the mountain itself, but the road was only a few yards away. The two of them took up position behind a large outcropping of rock that allowed them to see the approach to the city without themselves being seen by anyone on the road. Then, they settled down to wait. It didn't take long. About 10 minutes after they'd settled into place, they heard movement on the road. Cade snuck a glance around the boulder behind which he was hiding and saw three individuals headed toward them. They wore hooded robes and walked with their heads down, preventing Cade from seeing them clearly, but they were of roughly the right size and didn't appear too imposing. They would have to do. As the trio came abreast of them, Cade gave the signal. He and Riley slipped from their hiding place and snuck up behind the newcomers. The newcomers were no match for the Templar soldiers, and soon the three of them were lying unconscious on the ground. Their victims hadn't said a word during the entire confrontation, and when Cade stripped the robe from the lead figure, he discovered why. The man had no face. A blank visage confronted him, a smooth plane unbroken by mouth, nose, or eyes. It was as if the creator had gotten distracted and moved on to his next project before he'd finished with this one. The sight was strangely unnerving to Cade, and he found he couldn't look at the other for long without growing uncomfortable. Thankfully, he wouldn't have to. Turning away from the body, he donned the man's robe, while Riley did the same with one of the others. The robes covered their heads and hid their faces from casual view, and that was exactly what Cade had wanted. They dragged the bodies out of sight behind the rocks. Cade would have preferred to leave them bound and gagged, but he didn't have anything with which to do so. Hopefully, Cade and Riley would be inside the city before they revived, or were discovered by other travelers. Carefully, the two made their way closer to the city gates, trying to keep behind cover and stay as low as possible, not wanting to be seen by any sentries that might be manning the walls. The sun was just setting, and the rocks around them cast long shadows, which made their approach that much easier. When they had closed the distance to less than 100 yards, Cade hunkered down at the base of a shallow gully and called a halt.
Now what? Now we wait for the right Trojan horse to come along.
That didn't take too long either. As the sun set, the guards took longer in performing their duties, and soon a crowd had gathered in front of the gate, waiting. One of the groups waiting consisted of several wagons and a small group of people. More than a few were dressed in dark robes like those the Templars had confiscated. As the group began to pass inside the gates, Cade saw their opportunity.
Come on.
They strode swiftly out of the darkness and blended with the crowd. They kept their heads down and their hoods pulled low over their faces. The guards had already passed the group's leaders through and were no longer examining individual members, so the Templars were able to slip inside as if they were part of the caravan. They stayed with the group just until they were out of sight of the gate. As the caravan moved deeper into the city, Cade and Riley slipped down a side street and away from them. So they were inside the city, All they had to do now was find Duncan. They took a moment to examine their surroundings. Cade was brought up short by the strange array of buildings before him. A 17th century homestead stood between two gleaming towers of glass as dark as obsidian that looked as if they were blown rather than constructed. Further down the street, a monolithic office building built in the blocky style favored by government contractors in the 1950s stood opposite a three-story tenement that seemed to be straight out of a Dickens novel. And he'd be damned if that white church tower peeking through from the block beyond didn't look like an exact duplicate of Boston's Old North Church. An occasional street lamp pushed back the darkness, their green-blue flames dancing and weaving inside domes of fuzzy glass. Riley looked around with distaste.
How are we going to find Duncan in this place?
I think our best bet is just to keep moving.
Cadet! Here's our car!
Cade turned toward the sound, his hand on the hilt of his weapon, and was nearly bowled over when someone dashed out of a nearby alley and slammed into him. As he disentangled himself, Cade was astonished to see that it was a young girl. She couldn't have been more than 6 or 7, with long dark hair bound up in pigtails. She wore a gray shift that hung loosely on her frame, and it was clear from the mud and food stains upon its surface that it hadn't been washed in some time.
Don't let them get me!
Before Cade or Riley could say anything, her pursuers arrived on the scene. There were two of them, big, hulking brutes at least 7 feet tall, and they looked like they meant business. Both wore stylized metal masks covering the lower half of their faces and rose up to surround their blood-red eyes. Masks that appear to be bolted directly into the skin and bone beneath. Above the masks, their bare scalps were crisscrossed with a web of thick red scars. Both were armed with large curved blades that resembled oversized scimitars. Despite their brutish appearance, they had an aura of authority that was hard to dismiss. If this was what the city was using for law enforcement, Cade would be quite happy to stay on their good side. At the sight of her pursuers, the girl cowered.
Use a car!
When the brute saw that he wasn't being understood, he raised his weapon in a menacing gesture. A common language wasn't needed to understand that message. Out of the corner of his eye, Cade saw Riley's hand drift toward the hilt of his weapon in response.
This isn't our fight.
But even as he said it, Cade knew that Riley wasn't going to see things that way. He'd never been to the Beyond, didn't understand that sometimes the most vile creatures were often those that hid under innocent guises. He saw only a defenseless girl being harassed by two bullies, rather than the possibility that the girl, despite her innocent appearance, might actually be the greater danger. Enforcer number one had apparently had enough. He strode forward and reached out for the girl with his free hand, ignoring the Templar warriors completely, as if he knew they wouldn't dare defy him.
Get up! It's time to go!
Just wait, you son of a bitch. Wait until I get my hands on you.
But Duncan knew that right now, he wasn't getting his hands on anyone, no matter how badly he wanted to, as they were still bound in the set of manacles that Bishop had slapped on them the night before. He hadn't been imagining things either. The metal still felt cold and greasy to the touch, just as it had last night, and seemed to squirm against his flesh with a life of its own. It made him sick to his stomach if he thought about it, so he did his best to ignore it and think about other things. Like how the heck to get out of there. He rolled over and climbed to his feet. His legs were unsteady beneath him, and he again wondered if his physical condition was simply a result of being here in the Beyond, or if Bishop was surreptitiously feeding on him in the dead of night. Either way, it was clear that something was going on. He hadn't felt this weak in years. His sight was fuzzy, his balance shot, and he couldn't seem to keep track of his thoughts for more than a few minutes, no matter how hard he tried. Bishop opened the door slightly and looked out.
Fallon Nazur Destir Kurnete.
He must have been satisfied with the response, which Duncan couldn't hear, for Bishop hauled on the length of chain attached to Duncan's manacles, and the captive had no choice but to follow. The hallway was empty when they emerged from the room. Whoever had been there was gone. They descended to the main floor and passed through several rooms before reaching another staircase. Unlike the first one, this one descended into the depths of the cellar beneath the structure. No sooner had they reached the bottom of that staircase than they entered a series of tunnels carved from the earth itself, marching ahead into the darkness, and quickly leaving the light behind. The tunnels were cold, dark, and narrow. Despite the lack of illumination, Bishop moved unerringly through their depths, hauling Duncan along with him, unmindful of the fact that the other man couldn't see. Time and time again, the gun slammed into the walls as Bishop turned into narrow side passages without giving his captive any warning, and before long, Duncan had lost all sense of direction. The need to keep from smashing his head into an unseen obstacle, requiring all of his concentration and preventing him from memorizing the turns they'd taken thus far. By the time light from somewhere up ahead began to filter back down the tunnel to them, Duncan was too exhausted to do anything but follow his captor. The light grew brighter, and it wasn't long before they emerged from the tunnel and found themselves on a beach of black sand facing the open sea. 6-foot torches were jammed into the ground in a semicircle around the cave from which they emerged, the torches' flames burning that strange green-silver color that Duncan had seen back in the camp. The sight of the ship anchored out in the harbor brought Duncan to a stumbling halt. It was like something out of the history books, a 3-masted sailing vessel with high sides and square stern. Gun ports could be seen running along the side facing the harbor, and Duncan found himself wondering about the sorts of beings that might be manning those weapons in a place like this. The ship rode low in the water, though whether from the style of its construction or because it was heavy with cargo, he couldn't tell. It dawned on him that the torches had been set up as a signal for those aboard the vessel, and sure enough, a second, smaller light on the water showed them a longboat halfway between the galleon and the beach. It was clearly headed in their direction, and upon seeing it, Bishop smiled in satisfaction. Duncan realized that he was either going to be handed off to the men in the ship, or the two of them were going to take a trip somewhere together. It turned out to be the latter. Bishop dragged him down to the waterline, and there they waited for the longboat to reach them. As it drew closer, Duncan could see that there were two men working the oars, while a third stood in the prow holding a lantern, lighting the way. When they reached the beach, the oarsmen jumped out and dragged the vessel up onto the beach, allowing the other to disembark without setting foot in the water. The leader strode across the sand.
Harkur, vetir,
Harkurva.
The leader was quite large, 7 feet at least, Duncan guessed, with the girth to match. He was dressed in clothes that belonged in another century, high-waisted pants and a ruffled shirt, with sailor's boots on his feet, and a thick cloak with a hood tied about his neck to complete the image. Duncan couldn't see his face, but when the other turned in his direction, he could see eyes of blazing red there in the darkness beneath the hood. The Templar Knight was suddenly happy, but that was all that he could see. Bishop and the newcomer conversed for a few minutes, with Bishop growing angrier with each response he received, until at last he was shouting. The other man refused to budge, however, and Bishop finally had no choice but to give in. Bishop reached inside his shirt and produced a small cloth pouch, which he then handed to the newcomer. The other man, if that was indeed what he actually was, slipped it into the pocket of his cloak without opening it, and then gestured toward the longboat behind him. It was clearly an invitation. With a harsh yank on the chains, which forced Duncan to stumble forward to keep up, Bishop strode down the beach and stepped aboard the boat.